You're listening to Away with Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. When Mount Vesuvius erupted in the first century, it covered the city of Pompeii, and it left a lot of things intact, including ancient graffiti. And I've been looking at some of the graffiti on the walls of Pompeii, and it's really fascinating. It's sort of a reminder that some things never change. A lot of the graffiti is really personal. It mentions people by name, like Celadus the Thracian makes the girls moan.
There's a lot of naughty graffiti, if I remember correctly.
There's a lot of awfully naughty graffiti that I can't share on the air, but these personal ones are really interesting. A lot of it's boastful, like Floronius, privileged soldier of the 7th Legion, was here. The women did not know of his presence. Only 6 women came to know, too few for such a stallion.
Good going, Polonius.
And then I really like this one. It's, I've caught a cold.
That's it?
Yes.
I've caught a cold.
Yes, and there's something so touching to me about that. Pituita me tenet. I've caught a cold. You know, it's like when you're sick and there's nothing you can do. There's nothing anybody else can do, but you want people to know that you're sick.
Yeah, hear me.
I don't know. There's something really touching and also kind of funny about all of this.
I love ancient graffiti. I have a colleague who is studying ancient graffiti in Greece, bringing her students around to do it. But my favorite place for older graffiti, I won't call it ancient, is the Temple of Dendur at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. So
there's this
whole temple that was built like 19 BC or something like that. In it is 200-year-old graffiti left by Europeans who went to Egypt. So it'll be like soldiers and Egyptologists of the period who, you know, even though they were studying this culture and bringing these artifacts back, didn't have a problem with leaving their mark on it. You would never see a modern academic or soldier do that sort of
thing.
Well, probably not.
Yeah. Isn't that something? I mean, it's just this human urge to leave our mark, to be seen, to be heard, right? I guess now it's in social media.
Right, yeah. Social media is the natural extension of the handprints on the cave wall, right?
Yep. And some of that's filthy, too, but we won't go there.
This is a show about words and language. Give us a call. Send us an email, 877-929-9673. Words at waywardradio.org, or talk to us on Twitter at WAYWORD. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hello, how are you? This is Claudette McCann from Tallahassee, Florida.
Hi, Claudette. We're super groovy over here. How about you?
Hey, Claudette.
Hi. I'm doing well.
What's going on?
I was driving home one day, and I love listening to your show, which I know everybody tells you, but really do. And so we can only text at stop signs and, you know, when you're not driving in cars, but oftentimes those are pretty quick. And I had this text message going back and forth with one of my daughters, and she was asking me where the baby wipes were. So I sent my text back, and then I get this huh from her, and I thought, okay, let me see what I actually texted. So it was like, where are the baby woes? And I thought, well, I could understand that there could be a problem if you can't find the baby wipe. But my text said, whoa. So I thought, well, you know, and it's happened several times where I'll get this huh back from somebody. So I've decided we need to coin the phrase, instead of read between the lines, it needs to be read between the autocorrect.
I agree with you completely. Because it almost sounds like a philosophical question. Where are the baby's woes?
That's right. Or the baby woes, yes.
Baby woes. And he is pretty woeful because we do need to find the whites for
him. A little bum needs some TLC, huh?
Yeah. Right. Ever since I got an iPhone and started using Siri and using Siri to dictate because I'm too lazy to type. Oh, my gosh.
You're a modern woman. You're not lazy, Martha. Don't talk about yourself like that.
All right. I'm efficient.
You're forward-thinking
and
modern.
I'm efficient, but Siri is ruining my life.
She does have her own interpretations of things, I think.
She does. It's not that she's ruining my life necessarily. There are a lot of misunderstandings, but there are a lot of really funny things. In fact, I've started with my friends using the acronym LTTS, which just means let that typo stand, because sometimes they're really funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are funny. I mean, the other day my daughter said, I'm going to try to sleep for a little bit. Abscond to your house afterwards.
Abscond?
Abscond.
What did she mean? What did she intend to type?
Well, she was really trying to say, and come to your house afterwards.
Oh. So, okay.
You know, I'm sure You know, I got the gist of it.
That
so
sounds
it
more exciting
that.
To have gone to someone's house.
Right, that's right.
Claudette, my question for you is, have you adopted any of those things into your texting? Because I've certainly done that. I have a friend, when she's coming to the house, she will say, any needs? Like, should I stop by the store and pick up anything? But it came out once, Ganymedes. And Ganymede, of course, was the youth with the erotic attachment to Zeus.
And this is a moon of Jupiter.
Yeah, it's a moon of Jupiter, too. But we just use Ganymedes now when we want to say any needs. Do you have anything that you've adopted into your texting vocabulary?
No, I really haven't done that. Maybe it's because they're too random for me. But, you know, that would be interesting. But, you know, chances are I'm not going to adopt anything that's cute and intentional.
But Googling around, I do see a handful of other people who use the expression read between the autocorrect. And it's always cases that you describe. It's where... Well, you know what I mean. It's like it's pretty clear that unless you want to be mean or just pretend to be dense, you're going to get what they meant. But there's also a joke in there somewhere.
Claudette, I'm betting that a lot of other listeners are going to let us know words that they've adopted from autocorrect mistakes. What do you bet?
Oh, they probably will. And maybe I should. You know, maybe one of these days I'll find one that I think is particularly cute or compelling or that has just a secret meaning between the person I'm texting. And adopt that one.
Okay. Well, let us know, okay?
All right, have a good day.
Take care. Drive carefully. Bye-bye.
Tell us about how you read between the autocorrects. What has it done to your typing? 877-929-9673. Email words@waywardradio.org.
Hi, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Jill Lippincott calling from Miami.
Hey, Jill, welcome.
Hi, Jill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What's up?
Well, so I'm a big watcher of the British police procedural shows on my PBS stations. I like to watch Vera. I like to watch Smith and Bailey. And they use a term on them when they are interrogating a suspect, and it's grassing or to grass somebody, as in to inform on someone or to tattle on someone. In the United States, we would say we would rat someone out or rat on someone. And I was just wondering where that comes from, to grass someone.
To grass.
Yeah, I remember reading this for the first time in a prison narrative, like a first-person story about somebody's time in prison. It was a great story, and I was like, I had no idea. It's interesting. It goes back to rhyming slang. So in old British slang, to shop someone would mean to inform on them. So you're basically shopping information about a person. I know that they've gone out robbing houses in the night, and you trade that with somebody else for favors or to get out of your own conviction, that sort of thing. So you're shopping on them. But the rhyming slang for to shop is grasshopper. So if you're a shopper, you turn into a grasshopper. A shopper, someone who informs, you become a grasshopper. And then grasshopper as rhyming slang was shortened to grass as a noun and verbed as well. So now if you grass, you inform on someone. So the meaning changed even though the form of the word transformed over time. And grass goes back, 1920s probably, maybe even a little bit older than that. And to shop someone dates back, 1800s at least.
So you're talking about like the Cockney rhyming from the East End of London.
It may not be Cockney rhyming. You know, it's often thought by people... the Americas that all rhyming slang is Cockney, and it isn't. There's tons of rhyming slang that has nothing to do with Cockney. So it could just be standard British rhyming slang.
Well, very interesting. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for calling. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Take care, Joe.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I really like that. So grasshopper was used as a noun or a verb?
So if you shop someone, you inform on them.
Yeah. And you are a grasshopper?
If you are someone who shops, then you're a shopper.
Uh-huh.
The rhyming slang for that is grasshopper.
Okay.
Grasshopper
is
shorted to grass as a noun, which then becomes a verb to grass.
That is so cool.
Yeah, right?
And we don't use it on
this
side of the ocean.
No, definitely. That's a very clear divide there. No American would use that unless they were being pretentious.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, call us with your language question, 877-929-9673, or send it to us in email. That address is words@waywardradio.org. You know how we say in English that the grass is greener in the neighbor's yard?
Yeah.
Meaning
that means everything always looks better when it's, you don't have it.
Yes, exactly. The Japanese expression that says the same thing is the neighbor's flowers are red.
Oh, right. And yours are wilted and the leaves are falling off.
877-929-9673.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Good morning. I'm Wanda Hammond, and I'm calling from Monta Vista, Colorado.
Hi, Wanda. Welcome. We said Wanda?
Yes, that's it.
Wanda, welcome to the show.
What's happening,
Thank
Wanda?
You.
What's going on?
I would like to know where the word hornswoggled came from. How do you schwoggle a horn, or what does that have to do with anything with?
Hornswoggle. Have you been swindled lately?
No swindled, no bamboozled, but hornswoggled, maybe.
You've been hornswoggled.
Somebody pulled one over.
Congratulations. Yeah, and by hornswoggled, we mean, as Grant suggested, to be tricked or swindled or embarrassed, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a word we don't know the origin for.
It's an American word, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of these words that seems of a piece with a lot of rambunctious frontier words, words that people came up with on the frontier back in the 1830s, 1840s.
So these long words, they made up to sound important.
Yeah, to sound like they came from Latin or something.
But probably to mimic the people who were self-important rather than actually like trying to put on real air.
And there are lots of different variations of it, like horn swoggle and horn scriggle and horn snoggle and horn swaggle and horn swargle. It sort of sounds like what it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are a lot of words like that, like honeyfuggle, which sort of means the same thing, or bum swiggle. It's just sort of a silly sounding word, we
bum
think.
Bum swiggle?
Bum swiggle.
Sounds like the latest dance craze.
Yeah.
That's not like twerking, is it?
I don't know if it's like twerking. I don't even know if it's bum swiggle or bums wiggle. But bum swiggle. I'll be bum swiggled. I'll be horn swoggled.
I'll have to try the bum swiggled one of these days.
All right. So that's about all we have on that.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Wanda. Take care now.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
877-929-9673. Email words at waywardradio.org. Try us on Twitter at WAYWORD. And, you know, we've got a really lively Facebook group where you can find thousands of people just like yourself talking about language.
More wordplay for word fans. Stick around. You're listening to Away with Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett, and we're joined by our quiz guy, John Chinesky. Hi, John.
Hi, Grant. Hi, Martha. I'm back again.
Got some quizzes, I hope.
I do. I have one right here. Dictum is one of my favorite word games in my book, Super Party Games, Fun and Original Ideas for 10 or More. Where can you get that book? My house. It's out of print.
I'm waiting for the film to come out.
Now, dictum is called dictum because if you look up the word dictionary in the dictionary, dictum is the very next word. So the idea of dictum is that I'll give you a word. You have to give me the closest bold-faced main dictionary entry after it.
The head word. The bolded head word.
Yes. Sakes.
And Merriam-Webster's 11th Collegiate, which I have here in front of me. Okay. I also have here in front of me the 10 words following each word. The closer you get to the key word, the better.
Oh, so it's like right? Pitching pennies. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
For example, if I gave you the word dragoon, you might say Drake. Now, that's pretty good, but that's only worth 2 points. The word dragster is better. It's worth 8 points. But the entry drag queen is the closest entry worth 10 points.
Okay.
Wow.
So now we're not
the
actually
one
keeping
most closely behind the word that you give us.
Right. Most closely after. Mm. No, we're not actually keeping score of points, but we'll see how you guys do. Grant and Martha, head to head. Here we go.
Okay.
The first word is contrary.
Contrast.
Ooh.
Contrast?
Is that the word you're going for?
Yes.
I'm going for contra. No, that would be later, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be earlier. Contrast is good.
Contrast is worth 10 points. It is the next word. Very good. Can you get one more out of the next 10? What do you think?
Contrastive, but I don't know if that's a word.
Yeah, contrastive. That's 9 points.
Wow.
Nicely done for 19 points. I'll give you the next ones. We have contrasty, which means like in photos that has too much contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Contravene, contravention, contretemps. Contribute, contribution, contributory, and contrite.
Nice.
Okay.
Any of those would have done very well. Here's your next one. Ready? Emasculate.
How about embarrass?
Yes, embarrass.
Nice.
Very good.
Very well done.
That's 4 points. Very good.
So there's more. There's some further
four
up.
4 points.
The 10th point word is embalm.
Oh, good.
Oh,
nice.
Embark, right?
Embank, embankment, embarcadero. Embargo, uh-huh. Embark, then you got embarrass, okay. Embarrassedly, embarrassingly, and embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad, guys. Here we go. Yeah. Number. Here's the next one. Ready? Mausoleum.
Mausoleum.
I probably don't have to spell it for the benefit of many of the listeners, but I will. Mausoleum. Mausoleum.
Maven.
Mauve.
Mauve is 10.
Oh, nice.
Maven is 9.
Nice.
Nicely done. First and second one. Very good.
Maverick.
Okay. Ooh.
Maverick is 8 points. That's the next one. You got the first three in a row. Nicely done.
Very good. Okay, let's keep going then. Mavis.
Mavis is the next word. That's number 7.
Yes. What's a
Mavis?
It's a kind of bird.
Oh, nice.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Are we up to maw or
maw is number 5. You skipped maw. One.
Hang on. M-A-V. We did Maverick. We did Maven.
You skipped a rather obscure word. I'll give it to you.
Okay, what is it?
It's mavournine.
Spell it?
Oh, yeah.
M-A-V-O-U-R-N-E-E-N.
And what is it? Something Arabic.
Mavournine, my darling.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in
okay.
Irish, right?
Mavournine in Irish, yes. And the last 5 are, well, you got maw. Mawkish. Max.
Yep.
Maxi. And maxilla. Hey, you know what? You guys did fantastic. You got lots and lots of points.
Fascinating
there.
Fascinating quiz. Really.
Quite this
really challenging.
Yes. Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a bunch. We'd love to talk with you about any aspect of language, so call us 877-929-9673. Send your emails to words@waywardradio.org. You can find us on Twitter at the handle Wayward, and we're on Facebook. Hi, you have a way with words.
Hi, my name is Renee from Plano, Texas.
Hi, Renee. Welcome.
Hello there.
Hi. I'm originally from Persia, where there's some intermingling of French terms in the Persian language, especially in the medical field. But the word that I'm interested in knowing about is a familial term, nanu, which is what we called my paternal grandmother. I have never heard anyone else's grandmother call this and always wondered where it came from. One day, I happened to be watching a movie called Roman Holiday with Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn, and I heard them call an elderly lady Nanu, so I thought this might be a French term after all.
Are you sure it was Roman Holiday?
I think it was, but I could be mistaken.
There's a movie called Affair to Remember with Cary Grant and Deborah Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great film. Mm-hmm. And in this film, I believe his grandmother's name is Janu. It's a name, though. It's not like a familial title. It's J-A-N-O-U. And actually, I've known a woman named Janu in New York. So maybe that's what you heard. It sounds a lot like Nanu. But to get to your point, though, there are, throughout the Middle East and the Mediterranean countries, some of the many nicknames that you can have for grandmothers, and there are a ton of nicknames, the formal names and then the nickname ones, are related to Nanu. They sound like Nani, Nene, Nana, Noni. So Greece, Armenia, Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Italy.
Even in Ireland and the English-speaking countries, you will often have grandmother called Nana or Nana. I had a Nana or a Nanny or that sort of thing.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Wonderful. Well, that is so good to know. And thank you for telling me, because whatever movie it was, I just saw a little snippet of it, and I thought, that's a lovely, charming movie. It was many, many years
ago. It is a charming movie. I recommend you get Affair to Remember and watch it. It's really charming. It holds up very well. And they're a lovely couple together. Just really, really
wonderful.
Nice to look at, and good actors to boot.
Wonderful. Well, I really love your show, as English is my second language. And when we arrived in the U.S., my parents always stressed how important it was to really learn a language completely, because they themselves had tremendous love for language and literature. So I have always enjoyed learning new words and figuring out how they are similarities across various languages, mm-hmm. and hope to have passed this down to my own son. So thank
oh, that's
you so
fantastic.
Much for all that you guys do.
Renee,
oh,
it sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Can I ask a favor of you? Can you say goodbye in Farsi for us?
Of course. Of course. Khodafez, Dostan Aziz.
Oh, same,
oh, that's
same.
Beautiful.
Thank you very Khale much.
Mamnoon.
Oh, you're welcome. You're so sweet. Thank you so much. You know, language, you know, we see the commonality of the world of humanities through language and how we are so much alike, whatever language we speak. You know, the human heart is the same. So that's what's so important.
I agree. I
oh
love that.
Gosh.
The human heart is the same.
Beautifully expressed. Beautifully expressed.
All right,
thank
best
you
wishes
so much.
To you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
But this is it. Did she not nail it?
I mean, she nailed it completely.
We'd love to hear about your human heart, 877-929-9673. Email words at waywardradio.org and on Twitter at WAYWORD.
Another bit of ancient graffiti that apparently appeared on lots of different walls in different places. I wonder, O wall that you have not yet collapsed, so many writers' cliches do you bear?
Oh, so it's a commentary about the sameness
of
graffiti, which
right.
is still the case.
Yes.
It's always interesting to me in Reddit when the picture forums where somebody will post, oh, I saw this funny thing
mm-hmm.
on the wall of the bathroom.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, I know for a fact that is at least 100
yes.
years old because work is done about 100 years ago on this stuff. But to them, it's new.
Oh, yeah.
And then the question is always, who's bringing a Sharpie to the bathroom?
That is always the question.
Why do you have a Sharpie on you? Come prepared.
That's true. Plan ahead, right? 877-929-9673. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Brandy from Milwaukee.
Hey, Brandy from Milwaukee.
How you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Groovy. What can we do for you?
I heard the phrase spittin' game used to refer to the way a young man might try and talk to a woman if he likes her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
this came up in a discussion about love and keeping love alive. And one of the people in this group who was about 50 he said back in his day, the guy wanted to talk to a girl, they would call it rapping. Mm-hmm. And so he asked, I don't know, you know, what do we call it today? And a person who's about 20, she put spitting game out there.
Yeah, there we go. That's it.
Spitting game. That doesn't sound very romantic to me.
It doesn't sound very romantic at all.
We've got some history here. We can break this down into component pieces and learn a little bit more about it if you want.
Okay.
The part that interests me the most about this is game. I love the idea mm-hmm. of game as what you're up to.
Mm-hmm.
Your game is your strategy. And it definitely comes from African-American English, probably dates easily into the 1960s, maybe older than that. And for a long time, game was just how you behaved on the street, how you behaved around your friends, how you behaved when you were hustling, when you're out there trying to make money or get a job or do whatever it took to get by. And then you start to see pop up in the 1970s, people talking game, and it's exactly the same meaning. They're talking game, meaning, oh, I saw this sweet lady and I talked some game to her and we're going out tomorrow
okay.
night, going to the clubs.
Okay,
and then
talk some game.
1990s or so, maybe even a little earlier, two bits of slang merged. We already had to spit, meaning to talk, but it came from rapping. It came from the old school MCs in the club doing their thing live on the microphone, you know, not for tape, not for a CD, not for recording. It just, you know, think of the late 70s, early 80s. Maybe you've seen some of the movies about the time period. If you're on the mic, you're spitting. You're spitting rhymes. You're spitting lyrics.
Oh,
and then so
okay.
later, by the 1990s, spit joined game. So instead of talking game, you started spitting game, which means you are telling a lady everything that you have in mind for the two of you to become a couple and get
it's
to know each other better.
It's your best shot.
Yeah, it's your best
yeah.
shot.
Okay.
For a while there, you might have said you were macking on somebody, but we don't really use that much anymore, do we?
Macking.
Yeah, you knew on that one? Yeah, to mack on somebody is to
is
hit
like
on them.
Mac Daddy?
Yeah, it's like that.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the short version. If you want a book that's got some good stuff on this, Randy, take a look at Randy Kurtz's book, Street Talk. It's the official guide to hip hop and urban slanguage. He's very thorough in terms of what he includes. He doesn't take words very far back, but he's got a pretty decent natural understanding of a whole big segment of slang that doesn't get a lot of attention in most of the official dictionaries.
Okay, awesome. That'll help me get around better in Milwaukee, I think. I'm new to this area, and I'm hearing these expressions all the time, and I want to know what's going on.
Take care now, Brandy.
Yeah, call us again.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
We'll be in touch. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Call us with your language questions, and we'll be on it like a bonnet, 877-929-9673, or send them an email to words@waywardradio.org. As an English major in college, I pretty much memorized, or felt like I memorized, the book On Writing Well by William Zinsser. Do you remember that one?
Yes, absolutely.
It was a fantastic book. He died recently, and I'm reminded of a quote from him that I really like. He said, "Ultimately, the product any writer has to sell is not the subject being written about, but who he or she is. I often find myself reading with interest about a topic I never thought would interest me, some scientific quest, perhaps. What holds me is the enthusiasm of the writer for his field." And that is just so true, right?
I like that.
I mean, I'll read about potatoes if somebody's writing about them with passion.
So fare thee well, William Zinsser.
Yes. What writers have had the biggest influence on your writing? You can write to us about it at words@waywardradio.org or call us 877-929-9673. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Benjamin. I'm calling from San Diego.
Hey, Benjamin, welcome.
Hey there, what's going on?
I grew up in New Jersey, and I always referred to a sloppy joe as a sandwich that was not what everyone else referred to as a sloppy joe. My sloppy joe was a deli sandwich with pastrami and coleslaw and other things, and a triangular, unusually a rye. And everywhere else I go in the country, they refer to sloppy joe as this meat sandwich with ground beef and sauce and stuff. And I did a little bit of research on the subject, and it seems like it was really specific, like a couple of towns in North Jersey where I was from. And I was wondering where that came from.
So a couple of towns in North Jersey, was it just one deli chain or something?
No. So my mother is from New Jersey, and apparently she grew up near a deli. I think it was called Kabachnik's. And when over there, she would order this sloppy joe tray, and my whole family would be really excited. And it was just a really fantastic sandwich. And it was really funny. I think in college, I had a girlfriend come over, and my whole family was talking about, oh, we're getting sloppy joes. We're ordering sloppy joes from the deli. It's going to be so exciting. And the whole time, she's very confused. She's like, why are you getting all excited about, lunch food, a ground beef sandwich? And we're like, oh, what are you talking about? They're delicious. And she's like, okay, you guys are getting really excited about what she perceived as, was it a man witch or whatever?
Yeah, right. Ordinary fare.
Yeah, crumbly, yeah.
That's awesome.
That is great.
So what did she say when the food arrived? I mean, did she did she walk out? Was her mind blown? Did she break up?
She was pretty quiet and quietly enjoyed the sandwich. And it was not until 2 years later, I have since married her. After the fact, she's like, yeah, you guys, I had no idea what you were talking about. Sloppy Joe. It's not even that sloppy.
It's not even that sloppy.
And a guy named Joe didn't make it.
It's funny because I feel like most New Jersey food that I think of that I miss about living on the East Coast of New Jersey, they're generally New York foods, a really good slice of pizza, decent bagel. Yeah. I was shocked when I went other places, even a little bit further south in New Jersey into New York. And I would say Sloppy Joe, and it was just, I always had to remind myself that people had no idea what I was talking about, and they thought I was getting really excited about a crumbly, messy, leaky sandwich.
A truly sloppy sandwich.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And that's completely consistent with what I see here in the Dictionary of American Regional English. There's even an entry from somebody who says, when I was growing up in South Jersey, a Sloppy Joe was a ground beef sandwich. Once I moved to Central Jersey, I found out that a Sloppy Joe here is deli sandwiches made from turkey, coleslaw, and Russian dressing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's nice that you know, New Jersey can have its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when I grew up in Kentucky, certainly Sloppy Joes were that, you know, they made your hamburger bun all wet over the sides. It was ground beef and just raw. It was like a manwich, like you said.
There's a method. You have to protect the bread with other ingredients. We'll talk about this off mic, but there's a way to stop the soggy. There's a whole sandwich theory that we can get into. Maybe we'll start another podcast called Sandwich Theory.
Mostly vegetarian anyway.
Yeah.
That definitely is still a problem with the Sloppy Joe that I'm aware of, the soggy bread. You got to have it quick, get done before you're very, even though you have three slices of bread in there, you're running through it with your fingers, and it's not going to be too long before you got still the delicious and not as sloppy as the regular or other Sloppy Joe, still meat all over here.
Right,
yeah, that's
right.
And that's why you do it. That's why you do it at home, because you literally put it on the bread, and not 4 seconds later you have a bite in your mouth. Like, there's no distance between applying the meat to the bread and eating it.
I think a little bit of the sogginess is part of the magic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of other names for these kinds of sandwiches. The meat version, not the New Jersey version, right? All these different names for loose meat sandwiches. And
yeah,
the names change
totally
if they have sauce or don't have sauce. We've got taverns and slush burgers and I don't even know. Wimpy's?
Spoon burgers.
Spoon burgers, barbecues.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Benjamin, for sharing. I'm glad that you married the gal. Anybody who's willing to put up with your linguistic quirks is probably worth keeping.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate
your
time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, sure. Take care.
Thanks.
Give us a call again sometime, all right?
Have a great day.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, those calls always make me so hungry.
Seriously,
even though I don't eat meat.
I am literally leaving the studio and going to go get lunch, and there is no place in San Diego that's going to serve the sandwich that he described.
Bring me a pint of coleslaw, will you? 877-929-9673 is the number to call to talk about language, or you can email us. That address is words@waywardradio.org, and find us on Twitter @wayward. Here's some more ancient graffiti that I like. This was from the wall of an inn. The message is, "We have wet the bed. I admit we were wrong, my host. If you ask why... there was no chamber pot."
Oh, nice.
I think that's the equivalent of a comment card in today's hotels.
So they chiseled this in the wall?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
1 star. Don't go there. Wi-Fi signal's
terrible. Yelp the
hell
out of this. 877-929-9673.
More conversation about what we say and why we say it. Stay tuned. You're listening to Away with Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. I know very little about professional wrestling, but it's amazing what a taste of the sport you can get from just looking at the vocabulary. There's a wrestling newsletter called Pro Wrestling Torch, and it has online a glossary of a lot of the terms that they use in professional wrestling. And I learned so much. I learned that to blade is to cut oneself, usually with a small portion of a razor blade with tape wrapped around all but part of a milliliter of the cutting edge. And then the exposed portion is run across the skin to cause a clean cut so that the wrestler actually starts bleeding, particularly in the head, because the head wounds bleed more than other ones. And so it's
part of the showmanship
of
it, right? So
the
other guy looks like he's hitting you, and maybe there's some gentle contact, but it's not enough to break the skin. And you're like, when you put your hands up there to see if you're bleeding, that's when you do the cut.
Then,
you pull your hand
you
away,
are.
And there's the blood.
Yeah, and it's called juicing or gigging or getting color. And there's also a term in wrestling, red means green, which is an old phrase that's used to point out that the wrestlers who bled would get a bigger payoff.
If it leads, it bleeds. Another way of saying
that,
right?
Yeah, and another
one. If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, another one is canned heat.
What's canned heat?
Well, heat is the noise of the crowd, fans cheering. And canned heat is when the cheering and booing is added to a wrestling TV show in post-production.
Oh, I have no doubt that they do that.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, I've got to make it seem exciting, right?
Yeah, well, you're a slang guy. You picked up some slang from wrestling?
I absolutely have. I've done some digging on this before. There are a couple of terms that really struck me, so I looked into them. One is kayfabe. You and I have talked about this off mic.
Kayfabe.
Kayfabe is your persona. Even off of the mat, even in public, even in front of TV where it's not really about wrestling, they're supposed to keep their persona and supposed to not break kayfabe, as it's called. Occasionally, when a well-known wrestler will die, his fellow wrestlers will break kayfabe to express their regrets and give their best to the family. But generally, they keep their persona. And the personas are broken down into two major types. One is the heel, which is the bad guy. And the other one is the babyface, which is the good guy.
Right.
And my favorite other term is babyface turn, T-U-R-N. And a babyface turn is when the good guy goes bad. And like, yeah, you find like, you know, the golden boy comes out and suddenly when the locker room clears and they're all out there for the big brawl at the end of the show, it's all the bad guys on his side. You're like, wait a second.
What?
He's been misleading us this whole time.
What?
He's actually a heel.
Oh,
he's a bad guy.
God, he's turned like
I loved it when I was a kid. I loved it. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
We used to watch wrestling with my grandfather. I'm from Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, Bulldog Brown. He was great. I loved these guys. And this is small-time wrestling, you know, in a small-time place. But it was a lot of heart, a lot of fun. Obviously, it's showmanship. Obviously, it's theater.
Obviously, it's not a sport.
But these guys are committed to an art form which has got a long history. It's wonderful.
And it has a great vocabulary and language. We should post a link on our website to this glossary because it's really fantastic.
Absolutely. And if there's some language that you know from professional wrestling or anywhere else, this is the place to talk about it. 877-929-9673. Or send it an email to words@waywardradio.org or send it to us on Twitter at WAYWORD. Hello, you have a way with words.
Oh, hi, Grant. This is Linda. I'm calling from Lexington, South Carolina.
Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Linda. What would you like to talk with us about?
A coworker of mine and I were sitting together in the office, and a Bruce Springsteen song came on, Dancing in the Dark. And, you know, that song's been around forever, and we're just sort of bobbing along to it. And I stopped, and I kind of started paying attention to the lyrics. I said, you know, this song's kind of a bummer. He goes, what are you talking about? I go, well, he just said he wants to change his clothes, his hair, his face. He's living in a dump. And I said, and he goes, I never really noticed that before. I said, yeah, me either. And I looked up some more of the lyrics, and it's just really a downer of a song. Well, my question is, there are a lot of other songs like that where it sounds upbeat, but the lyrics are really kind of terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of just jamming along, you know? And I thought, is there a word for that kind of song where the song is upbeat sounding, but the lyrics are really a downer?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? It catches you up short.
Up a beat music, but downer lyrics.
Yeah. Do you remember 99 Red Balloons?
99 Red Balloons.
And that's such a perky, fun little song. You could almost see it on a children's show, but it ends up being about war and bombing out a city.
Right, right. And you're just bobbing along to it, especially the German version. I don't know what she's saying.
Exactly. Yes, yes. I think it's even worse in the German. Gosh, one word, I don't know, the best term I've seen for that is lyrical dissonance.
Ooh.
Lyrical dissonance.
Yeah. I mean, you'll
I like that.
You'll find that, although I don't think that's very colorful. But, you know,
no.
it's sort of the dissonance between the lyrics and the music. But you've identified a phenomenon that I think we can all relate to. I don't know. Do you have any others?
Oh, well, you know, years ago we talked about on the show about the interesting word agathakakalogical, which means something that's both good and bad. It's got really obvious Greek roots, if you know a little bit of Greek at all. And I think generally, agathakakalogical could describe this kind of song. So the good part is the peppy music, and the bad part is the meaning of the words. I also thought about the Italian word chiaroscuro, which is both light and dark. And then I thought, and this is even further out, there's a French word. You probably know the art term trompe l'oeil, which means to trick the eye. Well, there's one for the ear. It's trompe l'oreille.
Oh, I kind of like that.
But this is specifically for kinds of phrases in French that are almost tongue twisters. They depend upon the tendency in French for final consonants not to be pronounced, or there's a lot of words that sound exactly the same but are written very different. So any one of those, maybe, if you wanted to try to launch them out there.
Yeah,
but I do like lyrical dissonance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like agathakakalogical. I mean, the Agatha, of course, is from the Greek word for good, and that you see that in the name Agatha, and then the kakos is like bad, like cacophony.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Wow, but lyrical dissonance is so much easier to say.
Yeah,
well, it is.
I don't know. I got to talk a lot.
Spell, But there's so many other songs out there. I did a search and just for fun, and I've seen some people have written some articles about this. And another Bruce song, Born in the USA, You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simon, Eddie Grant, Electric Avenue, Prince, 1999, Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People, Hey Ya by Outkast. And I thought of another one, Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon. And I thought of that one because one of the greatest uses of alliteration is one of the most horrible lyrics, I think, in music. Little Old Lady Got Mutilated Late Last Night.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, yes.
In Little Italy?
You're jamming to it, right? Like, a little old lady died in that song, y'all.
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
And you're like, da, working, da, 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 doing my spreadsheets.
Really?
Da,
yeah.
Da, da.
In Electric Avenue. Wow, I didn't know that. I'm going to have to go back and listen.
All right. Thanks for your call. Rock on, Linda.
Thank you so much, y'all. Appreciate
bye-bye.
It.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there's a giant Reddit thread about this.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I bet we're going to hear lots and lots from listeners,
too. So I think
too.
If you Google songs that have peppy, happy music but sad lyrics, you will find the Reddit thread at the top of your search results.
Oh, I bet you will.
And it's fun, but also sad. You're like, oh, you're ruining it for me.
Oh, now you're sad about it.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, I don't want, like, where the lyrics are all super hypey positive and the music is all super hypey. You should just be really happy, mister, just to hear this song. I don't want any part of that. 877-929-9673. Email words at waywardradio.org. If you got a question like Linda's, we'd love to have it. Also try us on Twitter at Wayward, WAYWORD.
We put the call out for limerizations, those passages in literature converted into limerick form, and John Fisher came up with one. He's from San Antonio. He writes, "There once was a batter named Casey who would cinch Mudville's win prima facie, but he swung twice and missed, then after patrons there hissed, swung again, but did not get on basey." Brilliant,
nice
right?
Done, yes.
Brilliant.
Very, very good.
Send us your limerizations to words at waywardradio.org or call us. The number is 877-929-9673. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hello, this is Bob Fields. I'm calling from Orwell, Vermont, a little tiny town that has more cows than people in it.
Okay.
More cows than people.
There are two terms that we learned when we moved to Vermont. One of them is flatlander, and the other one is woodchuck. And they relate to whether the person is a native Vermonter or not. We've been told that a woodchuck is someone who's a native Vermonter, and in fact, we were told that it is a native Vermonter with at least one or two, maybe even three generations of Vermont residents, people who have been born and lived in Vermont. Whereas a flatlander is someone who doesn't come from Vermont, but in fact comes from out of state, which seemed a little bit of a kind of a joke for us because we came from California to Vermont where the mountains are 12 to 14,000 feet high, and in Vermont they're a mere 4,000 feet high.
A mere 4,000
feet. We were just wondering what the background between those two words is because they seem kind of interesting, and we're just kind of wondering how native Vermonters ever got to be called woodchucks as opposed to flatlanders.
It's not 100% known, but the best guess is a really solid one. Most authorities, most Vermonters who study this stuff suggest that it just simply has to do with all the firewood. There's a lot of firewood in Vermont. It seems like everyone's always cutting, stacking, hauling, burning firewood. And so the woodchuck as a creature to call the locals just seems like a natural fit. You're always chucking wood around, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
In fact, I live in what is now an old derelict apple orchard that was started in 1894. And we do certainly cut a lot of firewood. Applewood is a great burning wood, and we just always wondered. We never thought it had to do with the firewood. We always thought it had to do with the animals.
Oh, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's the animals, too. But I mean, because they're local, and that's the local. Woodchuck is mainly used for groundhogs in the Northeast anyway. Interestingly enough, woodchuck is also sometimes used by New Yorkers who live upstate New York to refer to themselves. So it's not exclusive to Vermonters. The term flatlander is even more interesting in that it's used to describe outsiders or people from away in other parts of the country, not just in Vermont and New Hampshire. So you'll find people in the Pacific Northwest who use it as well. which is cool. But generally, it's referring to people, if you come from flatland, the suggestion there is that you don't know what the hard life is because you've never had to walk uphill or work uphill.
Well, that's interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Really appreciate the call, Bob.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
There's a blog by Sean Caravan called Innkeeping Insights in Stowe, Vermont.
Yeah.
And so this is his description of the difference between flatlanders and woodchucks.
He says,
flatlanders don't chuck wood. Flatlanders pick up the phone and dial a number they find in the classified section of their local paper. A few hours later, woodchucks arrive, usually in a rusting pickup truck filled with split wood, a mix of hardwoods, which they stack for the flatlander in exchange for cash.
Well, that pretty much explains it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's Sean Caravan of the blog Innkeeping Insights in Stowe.
Nice.
We'll take your questions about what they call locals and outsiders, 877-929-9673. Email words at waywardradio.org. Or find us on Twitter under the handle Wayward, WAYWORD. A friend sent me a climbing dictionary by Matt Samet, or Samet, S-A-M-E-T. It's just called Climbing Dictionary, put out by Mountaineers Books. And there's a couple things that interest me about this book. The first one being, I'm surprised by how much French has contributed to the jargon of the English-speaking world when it comes to climbing.
We're talking that makes sense.
Rock
yeah.
climbing, the mm-hmm. handholds and the equipment,
sure.
that sort of thing. Some of them are really fun. This one is my favorite. I may actually steal this for non-climbing experiences. It's a high-gravity day, and the definition is, a sub-desirable day on which all routes, even easy ones, feel impossible due to an ironic, hypothetical increase in gravity.
Oh my gosh, so that's totally applicable to life.
Yeah, it's the days where you wake up and you're like, oh, why does everything seem so hard today?
Blame it.
High-gravity day.
Yes. That's a great one.
High-gravity. And there's a ton of fun stuff in here. I love the ones where they talk about physical features in a non-obvious way, like a chicken head. Any idea what a chicken head is?
Is it a rock formation?
It is, yeah. It's a little kind of lump of rock that for some reason didn't erode away. Maybe it's made of a different material. And it sticks out like a chicken head, and you can use it as a handhold.
Oh, a chicken head. Yeah, of course.
So it's one of these natural occurring handholds,
right? Oh, of course.
Right?
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then dirt bag, which is not a very nice term for somebody who's really into climbing. So this is the Climbing Dictionary by Matt Samet, or Samet, S-A-M-E-T.
Let us know the slang from your workplace or pastime, 877-929-9673, or send it an email. That address is words at waywardradio.org.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Ricky from Walnut Creek.
Hi, Ricky. Walnut Creek, California, I guess.
Yes, California.
Welcome
Hi,
to
Ricky.
The show. What's up?
I am calling because I was in the middle of a discussion with my friend a while ago, and my friend said something along the lines of, oh my gosh, that person fit the description to the teeth. Now, I know there's an expression called to the T, and I have a feeling my ears were just playing games with me because I can't imagine he said to the teeth, and he says he didn't. But it still brought up the question, where does to the T come from?
To the teeth, like the things in your mouth, the white hard things.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have never heard to the teeth. I know about to the T, but I'm still curious to know about where to the T even came from.
Yeah. There are a couple of those expressions in English. To the teeth means completely, like if you're armed to the teeth, you're armed all the way up to your teeth or entrenched to the teeth.
Oh, so it is to the teeth.
Well,
okay,
that's a different thing, though. That's about being prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually, your instinct is correct. It is to a T.
To a T rather than to the T.
Yeah, to a T. It's usually with the capital letter T, and we're not sure of the origin, but I would say our best guess is that it's a shortening of the English word tittle.
Which means a little bit of something.
Yeah. Tittle is like the tiniest thing, like a dot on an I, something like that. And a T is even tinier than a tittle.
It is.
Well, it is because it's just one letter of the whole word.
Yeah.
The first letter of the word.
Yeah.
Okay. To a tittle. I don't think I ever even heard that word before, so I learned more than I was bargaining for.
Well, the tittle, most people know it in the expression jot and tittle.
Yeah.
I'll have a jot and tittle of the oats or something like that.
Yeah, which actually
goes... Did you say jot and tittle?
Yeah, jot, J-O-T, which related to the Greek letter iota.
Yeah, jot is.
Wow.
Yeah, which is absolutely tiny in ancient Greek. It goes under the vowel often, and it's just right. It looks like a speck, like a little flea. But
how interesting.
But yeah, in the Greek New Testament, Matthew 5:18, it talks about one jot or one tittle. So it's something really tiny.
Yeah, they use the word tittle.
Yeah.
In King James.
King Jim, yes, sir.
I like that word, tittle. And I wouldn't have known that. I'm Jewish. I know the Old Testament.
Ah, right. So you're going to switch to saying to a tittle instead of to a T?
I might just.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
Start conversations or stop them.
Take care now.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Good talking to you. Bye now.
One jot or tittle, a jot and a tittle of something. It's just a little bit of something.
Teeny, tiny, minute,
but it's
microscopic.
Too armed to the teeth, or mm-hmm. it fits me to A-T.
Got
to get those articles right.
Right. And no relation to T-shirts. Those came much later, 1920s.
Later. Yeah. 877-929-9673. Email words@waywardradio.org. And try us on Twitter at WAYWORD.
Things have come to a pretty bad. That's all for today's broadcast, but don't wait till next week to chat with us. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, or SoundCloud.
Check out our website, too, at waywardradio.org, where you'll find a dictionary, a newsletter, mobile apps, and a discussion forum. And you can listen to hundreds of past episodes for free.
You can also leave us a message anytime, day or night, at 877-929-9673. Share your family's stories about language, or ask us to resolve language disputes at work, home, or in school. You can also email us. That address is words@waywardradio.org.
Our senior producer is Stephanie Levine. The show is directed and edited this week by Tim Felton. We have production help from James Ramsey and Tamar Wittenberg. Away with Words is independently produced and distributed by Wayward Inc., a nonprofit supported by listeners and organizations who believe in lifelong learning and better human communication.
The show is coming to you from the Recording Arts Center at Studio West in San Diego, California. Thanks for listening. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett. Bye-bye.
So long. I like tomato, potato, potato. Do you want more new, fresh podcasts from us? Go to waywardradio.org/donate now and help us fund more new episodes each year.